Good morning. Today's shiur is going to be about Ponzi schemes. These are unfortunately a lot more common than you may imagine, where people take money for investments, they promise very lucrative returns, and for a period of time they're able to deliver. What they're doing simply is, as new investors come in, they're taking in the new money, paying out the old money, and as time goes on, they develop a reputation of consistent payers, the scheme gets bigger and bigger, until one fine day it finally collapses, and you end up with a lot of people who thought they were very wealthy, they thought they had invested very wisely, they're now stuck holding the bag. Now, we do not need a sheer bi'iyun to figure out that it is usur to run a Ponzi scheme. But where the area that we come up with very serious shilas, and we'll see very complicated questions, are how to deal with the aftermath. How do you deal, or what are the parties' rights among the victims? And to run through some of the questions that we'll hopefully get to throughout this year, what happens, for example, if you had an employee of this Ponzi schemer? He was working, he had no idea what was going on, but he realizes today that every dime that he's been paid was with stolen funds. Do the investors who were scammed, do they have a claim against the employee? Can they claw back the money that he was paid? Or can you say, no, I worked, I earned it, and it's mine? For that matter, every Ponzi scheme generally has some winners. The people who invested are early investors who came in the beginning, who have been getting their steady returns, very often pulled out their principal plus what they thought at the time were profits. And now they realize these payments were all stolen money. Do they have to put it back into the pot? And is there a difference between the profits that they pulled out or the principal that they pulled out? And lastly, or actually two other points, what happens if this Ponzi schemer, unfortunately, many of these people are very generous with other people's money, and they give large sums of money to tzedakah, they dedicate buildings. Part of it, I guess, is in their minds they think they're doing a mitzvah. And part of it is also it's part of the scheme. If they develop a reputation of being a big nadvin, a big baal tzedakah, it's good for business, people think they're trustworthy, and it's another way to bring in additional investors. Does the moysid, now that it realizes that these donations were from stolen goods, do they have an obligation to return it? And lastly, when the scheme collapses, very often the fellow has some money left in his account. How does it get divided? It's certainly not enough to repay everyone for their claims. So when you have limited assets, a lot of claims, how do we deal with it? How do we divide it among the victims? So we're going to begin. He'll steal from someone else. Not following.
The guy knows he's going to have investors coming for years.
Not investors. He knows that he has the ability to rob a bank tomorrow and repay the first investor. But he's going to repay with money that he's not entitled to. So our question is, if he goes ahead and does that, he robs the bank and repays the investor, can the investor keep the money or does it need to be returned? Well, first of all, the theory is a theory, but it's not a practice. And it can't last forever because at some point, when you're paying 20% a month or whatever your rate is, you're going to run out of investors. It's simply a question of time. But more importantly, what they're doing is he's not just saying, give me money, I'll give you a return. They're promising, I'm doing this and this investment. I'm buying real estate in Hungary. And it's not true. He's taking the money and he's spending it. So it's a fraud. Even if he has intention of ripping off the next person and paying back the first person, it doesn't mean it's not a fraud. It's a fraud that he's going to cover by perpetrating another fraud.
The other is one.
Both. Most people who do one manage to do the other as well. Okay, but if you're actually at that point, we're going to have to get... Okay, we'll get back to different degrees of what's happening towards the end. Okay, wait a second. We didn't start the share yet.
I would think that often it starts out legitimate, and maybe there'll be one or two good investments at the beginning, and then it gets to his head.
Fair enough.
So the first, let's just say the first year, there may have been true profits.
Fair enough. Fair enough. And if they're true profits and they're distributed, then there's no question. Our issue that we're focusing on is when he's taking money for a phantom investment that doesn't exist, and if the investment doesn't exist, clearly the profits don't exist either.
Am I not familiar whether it starts legitimately or not?
No, his point is just if it starts at a regular investment, the first year he's doing great and he's giving out good returns and it's legit, so then whatever he pays out and that's fine. If the next year he becomes a crook, and now things that it's a scam, so you can't go back to the people who invested when it was legit and got the money when it was legit, because that's not stolen goods. Okay, so let's begin. I'm going to use these questions and these issues to chazer many of the yisodos we've learned in Hilchos Gedolah. We'll see, some will be more relevant to Halacha L'maaseh at the end, but let's just start in the beginning. So the first point that we have to deal with is an obvious point. The person steals an item, he's a gazlan. So he has to return the item. There's a chiyuv of hishav zegzeilah. Someone steals your silver, he gets caught 20 years later. He has an obligation to return what he stole. The only real exception to that is if there was a shinoi. If he takes the item, he makes a material and irreversible change, then he can keep the item and just pay you back the value that it was worth at the time that he stole it. But if it's the same, he has to return it. The other exception is if there's yirsh and shinoi rishus. If when it was stolen you gave up hope of ever seeing it again, and the gazlan then gives it away or sells it, it changes possession. So there we have yirsh and shinoi rishus, and in that case you have no claim against the actual item. The buyer, the recipient, can keep it. You have to go after the ganev for the value of what he stole from you. But in the absence of yirsh and shinoi rishus, whenever you find the ganev, whenever you're able to recover the item, you have the right to demand it back because it still belongs to you. Now, based on that, if a gazlan steals an item and he sells it to someone else, you have an innocent purchaser who pays good money for the item, and then one day there's a knock on the door, and the victim comes and says, this item that you bought was really mine, it was stolen. So assuming the victim can prove that it was his, he can prove that it was stolen from him, and that he was not miyayish, he has the right to recover. The guy that can't sell something that didn't belong to him, and therefore Me'ikar Hadin, the victim would have the buyer, even though he didn't do anything wrong, he was an innocent purchaser, would have an obligation to return the item to the victim and go after the ganev to recover his funds. If a person proverbially buys the Brooklyn Bridge, so although he may have paid good money for the bridge, once he realizes that he was had, he can't say, but listen, I paid for it, I'm putting up a toll. He loses the bridge and he has to go after the ganev to go ahead and try to recover what he paid for. Now, although this is Me'ikar HaDin, this is what should happen, there's a takanas hashok. I believe this is Rabbi Gutman discussed this two weeks ago. But the Chazal were concerned if when you buy something, if it turns out that it was stolen, you have to give it back and you lose your money. So it would have a chilling effect on commerce. People would be afraid to buy anything unless it's from their neighbor, unless it's someone who they know well. Because how do they know whether it was stolen or not? And they're always running this risk that one day there'll be a knock on the door and the victim will say, it's mine, give it back to me. In order to facilitate commerce, in order to allow people to buy things in the marketplace without having this concern, Chazal made a takanas hashuk that if you buy something not realizing that it was stolen, you're an innocent purchaser. So then, if the victim, tracks you down and wants you to return the stolen item, even though he proves it was his and it was stolen, he has to reimburse you for what you paid before he recovers. The purchaser can say, true, it's yours, I'll give it back to you, but first reimburse me for what I paid, and this is a takanas hashuk in order to allow people to buy things without having to be concerned about that it was stolen. Now, because it's...
I think this is a ganesh, the lawyer, too. I mean, the one, it's Shimon bought the object from Tony,
Right.
It's the same for Chassid Shuk.
It should be. There's an interesting Ketzer Kedoshim that has some interesting stud and why it might be different. But in the Pashas Shabiyah, the point is it's not to protect the Ganav. The Ganav is not gaining anything. It's to protect an innocent purchaser. That you can buy something, you don't have to worry that it will be taken away. Now, because this is a Takanas Hashem, it's there to protect an innocent purchaser, it applies only if you're innocent. Masha Enkein, if you know it's stolen goods, there's no takana. If you buy something under very suspicious circumstances, you're driving in the city, you stop at a red light, and someone approaches you and offers you to sell you a Rolex for $100. So if you buy it, you will not be able to claim takana sashuk. You clearly knew that there was something was wrong with this transaction. It was very mistaver. There was a chazaka that it was stolen. And therefore, if the victim ever tracks you down, you'd have to return it to him. You would not be able to demand or claim this takano because you're not an innocent purchaser. There's a question how far this goes. The Ramah says that if you know the seller is a ganav, even though you have no idea that this particular item was stolen, then still you would have the Mechaber says that if you know the person's a ganav, even if you don't know that this item was stolen, there's no takana. It applies only when you buy it from a reputable vendor. If you know this person's a ganav, there's no protection. You should not have bought from him without doing your research. The Ramah argues, the Ramah says, even if you know the seller is a ganav, if you don't know this item was stolen, you still will have a takana. The Shach is actually the Machriya like the Mechaber. But so there's a machlokes to how far it goes, but it applies only to someone who bought it in innocence. He did not know that it was stolen. What happens if a ganav steals something and gives it away as a present? So does the recipient, can he claim this takana? The answer is no. The whole point of the takana is to protect commerce. You should be able to buy things. If you're given it as a present, you didn't pay for it, there's no reason to protect matanis. And therefore, if a ganav gives you a present, you now find out it was stolen, you would have an obligation to return the item to the victim, again, unless there was yish and shina rishuf. What if a ganav borrowed money? When it came time to repay, he didn't have the funds available. So he went ahead and he stole money from one person to repay his debt. So is repaying a debt like giving a present that doesn't have a takana? Or is it like a purchase that does have a takana? So if you hear the halacha is that there is no takana. The takana tashuk is only if you buy something if you buy stolen goods not really realizing they're stolen. To protect commerce, we say there's a takana, you don't have to return it. In this case, where the person lends money to the ganav, he lends him money before this whole incident. And then he already extended the credit, he trusted the ganav. Now the ganav paid him back with stolen goods. We say, give it back. Return the stolen goods. And the same way the ganav owed you money yesterday before he repaid you, so now he'll owe you money again. You go after him again. What? That might be true. But if he extends the loan based on it, Lamoshal, if a ganav steals something and uses it as collateral to get a loan, there you'll say it's hakonim. Because the lender gave out money because he thought he had this mashkin, Takanas Hashuk will say the same way we protect buying and selling, we're going to protect extending a loan that's similar to a sale, there's Takanas Hashuk. In this case, you lent the god of money 3 months ago. The fact that he now stole money to repay you, we say that's not called a repayment. So turn back the clock, and now, the same way you lent it to him 3 months ago, you were okay him owing you money, he owes you money again, and let him pay you back with his money, not with someone else's money.
How do you prove that this money,
that's true. Improving it is always going to be difficult. In practice, to prove it, even when it's a stolen item, to prove that this is the item and it wasn't, and it was stolen and he didn't buy it from the person, in practice, recovering in all of these cases is going to be a challenge. We're talking about what the halacha is. Many cases, the victim will be moido, or he trusts the guy, or the buyer trusts the victim, and he's not going to challenge the fact that it was stolen, and this is what happened.
I mean, the guy that got it, because it's stolen from other people too. I, you know, this money is...
Okay, good. Fair enough. If we have time, we'll get to what happens when he stole from many people and he has a pot of money. There are halakas about that, but it's true. In practice, if it goes to a dentaira and there are questions of how to prove things, things will get very difficult to prove what money came from where and what the flow was. We're talking more conceptually what the parameters are and what the halacha should be. But I agree with you. In practice, enforcing any of these halachas are extremely difficult. No, only by metalatlin. Only by metalatlin, by karka, there is no takana. If someone steals karka, even decades later, the victim can recover, and he does not have to pay it back. Karka is not nigzelis, and there's no takana either. So we have, okay, so just to briefly recap. Someone steals something, if there's no yir shashin rishos, al pi halacha, the victim, it always belongs to the victim. There's a special takana that if it gets sold to an innocent purchaser, the victim cannot take it away unless he reimburses him for what he spent. However, this is only by a sale, it does not apply to a matana, or paying back debt. Now, in Yaradei, in Siman Kuf Ayin Zayin, the Mechaber and the Shach and the Prisha talk about a case which is a bit more similar to our situation. There what happened is there was a Mechabel Ifka, someone he was managing an investment for an investor, and he went ahead and he gave a present with the money that he was supposed to be investing. The investor found out, and now he was going after the recipient, the person who received this present. So here, the Mechaber rules that the investor can recover from the Kabbal Matana. Although at the time where he got the present, he may have thought it was legit. Now that he knows it came from the investor's money, that the manager had no right to give away a present, it was supposed to be invested. So the recipient has to give it back to the investor, and he has to repay it. Along comes the Prisha and says that this is only true if the recipient knew that this money belonged to the investor. He knew good and well that the person giving the present had no right to be giving him the present. In that case, if he accepts it, the present, now he has an obligation to return it to the investor, to the true owner. However, if he didn't know that this was Shalikadin, he thought this was the manager, it was the manager's money, he didn't know that it was the Gzela, then the Prisha says he has no chiv to return. Comes along the Shach and says, what are you talking about? Now that we know today this money was stolen, stolen goods, given away as a present, the recipient has an obligation to return it. Why not? There's no yish, there's no shinui rishos, there's no shinui, there's no tachanas hashok, it was a present. So even though you accept it in good faith, you know now it belongs to the investor, return it to him. It's stolen goods. What right do you have to hold on to this money? What's pshad in the prisha? The Chavis Das makes a number of chalukim. He says like this. If a person steals money and gives a present, the recipient still has that item. And now we find out that it was stolen. So in that case, what's the halacha? You have to give it back. It's not yours. You realize today it belongs to the investor. Thus the Chavis Das, everyone agrees it has to be returned. But what happens in a slightly different case? Someone gives you a present. You tell them, thank you very much, you take the present. That night, someone breaks into your house and steals the present. You discover the next day that this present that you got, what was really stolen goods. Do you have a liability for this item? Are you a shomer for the original owner? That's a chavis das, no. You had no idea, you thought it was yours. You had no idea it was stolen goods. You were never makabel shmir. You're not a shomer aveda. You thought someone gave you a present, it was yours. So if it gets stolen, it gets lost, even if you're Peshaya, since you were never a Shem, you never Makabal Shmira, let the Chavis Das, we have no liability for that. So in a case where this item is still around, the Chavis Das says, it definitely has to be returned to the owner. In a case where it gets lost, you have no liability, because you're not a Shem. What happens if you get a present and you use the item up? Someone knocks on your door, you're making a simcha, they deliver a sushi platter. Wonderful. Taste that you like sushi, you eat it. You now find out that this was stolen. Do you have a chiyuv to pay for what you ate? Zakat Chavis Das, not so simple. Because over here, what did you do? You ate the item. What are you? Are you a goslin? Are you a mazik? What's your obligation? So in a case where you go into someone's house, you walk into a store and you eat the sushi, So you're a goblin. You take the sushi, you have to pay. Over here, you had every right to think it's yours. Someone knocks and he'll give you a present. You have every right to assume it's yours. If you go ahead and you eat it, you're a goblin bo'oinus. What? Good, great. So goblin bo'oinus, Zog the Chavis Das, he doesn't speak this out clearly, but it's in the Sha'ar Mishpat, and Simon Ayin Bey says this more clearly, goblin bo'oinus is potter. You're not a goblin. Other more loyalim is by Mavet. And even then, an oinus gomer is potter. But a goblin, someone who thinks it's his, he has every reason to believe it's his, you know, even the Israelistic, though, you don't become a goblin. And therefore, you can't be a mechayev al gazal. Now, nevertheless, you point the akram. You're a nene. You enjoy the sushi. The halacha is, if you're a nene from someone else's money, it's a zen nene v'zechasa. You enjoyed it. The other person lost out. He no longer has his sushi platter. So a zen nene v'zechasa, you have to pay. But you pay dmei basar bezal or dmei sushi bezal. Since, had you known you were paying full price, you would not have eaten the whole platter. You only helped yourself because you thought it was free. So the Gemara says that normally you pay two-thirds of the value because that's the amount that we assume when you get it at such a discount, that's the hana that you had. You would have eaten it even if you knew you were paying for it if you got it at such a cheap rate. So Zog the Chavis Das, in that case where you used it, we can't call you a goblin because you had no idea it wasn't yours. So you pay mashenana. Zog the Chavis Das, maybe you paid him less. Why? Because when you eat something, we said before, if a goblin steals something that makes a shinoi, he's koinis. Now when you eat the sushi, once you chew it up, it's a shinoi. It's not the same as when you got it. Zog the Chavis Das, the moment you start chewing it, even before you swallow it, he says already, it's nishtana. Once it's nishtana, it belongs to l'chayru, the first ganav. So in a chanami, the first ganav still has to pay for the sushi that he stole. But since the person who used it is only nene from it at the time he makes the shino, so at that point it no longer belongs to the victim. There's a shino that already belongs to the ganav. So therefore, the owner has to go after the first ganav. He can't go after the person that actually ate it, that had the hana, because we say the shino came first. The hana is after the shinoi, and therefore the owner's claim is against the ganav, not against the person who actually ate the sushi. Now, what? Shino doesn't need yish. Shino rishos needs yish. But a shinoi maisa is a kinyan even without yish. And since chewing it is a shinoi maisa, so therefore you'll go after the first ganav, not after the second. Now, what? Yeah, and that's Could be has the hanov at the same time, and anachami, it'll depend on the case. Yeah, the shach seems to argue, the shach seems to hold your chayiv in any case. The Sha'ar Mishpat understood in the shach, that the shach argues on the whole yesoid. He says, a goslin bo'ainis is still a goslin. Since you took it, even though it was in good faith, you still have been a goslin. Sha'ar Mishpat blights tarachin, he brings many riots, not like this, but that's how he understands the words of the shach. Now, based on this, let's go back to our Ponzi scheme. What did the Ponzi schemer do? He took money from people as an investment. He then used that money either to hire an employee, to pay back other investors, or to donate money to a Moisit Tzfakah. So what is that? This Bukhair is exactly like the case in Yerodet, where a Makabal Iska takes an investment, and he gives away a present that he's not entitled to. So the Bukhair will depend what he does with the money. If he goes ahead and uses this money and buys something, so a ganav that sells stolen goods, what did we say? It's a takanas hashuk. In order to protect commerce, the buyer does not have to return the item unless he's reimbursed. So l'chayru hu adin over here, where over here it's actually the opposite case. Here it's not stolen goods. He's buying legitimate goods with stolen money. But the seller can say, I gave him, I delivered items for him in exchange for that cash. That stolen money. You want to recover the money, I don't have to pay you back, takonos hashuk, and therefore, if the Ponzi schemer buys something with stolen goods, with stolen money, the seller, cannot go after the seller. The seller can say, I delivered an item in exchange for this, that's takonos hashuk, go after the Ponzi schemer, don't go after me. So you cannot go after the grocery or anyone who did business with him when there was a legitimate mechukul memkar, there was a sale. Who had then? An employee. If the Ponzi schemer hired a worker, assuming this worker was working in good faith, he didn't know that he wasn't part of the scheme, If he's part of the scheme, it's clearly it's a god on the first, and there's no tekanos hashuk if he knows that it's stolen money. But if he was not in on the take, he thought this was a legitimate investment. So he says, I provided services in exchange for this money, and therefore that's a tekanos hashuk. He would not have a chiyuv to go ahead and to return that money. Now, in contrast, what happens if this tanzi schemer took this money and gave away a present? Went to a bar mitzvah, went to a chasson, and gave away a generous present. So over here, as we mentioned before, there's no takonos hashok by present, and therefore the recipient would have, once we realize that this is stolen money, would have a chiyuv to return it. And if this is true by a regular makabel matana, who had a maisiv, if you made a donation to an organization, a donation is a matana, and therefore the matana, if we can track it down, this is stolen money, the organization would have an obligation to return these funds. There's no takonos hashuk. Now we have an interesting question, is what happens if a fellow takes the stolen money and he dedicated a building? When a person gives $1 million to an organization in order to get his name on the building, is that a matana or is that a mecca? Did he buy the name? If he bought the name, it's a nekach u'memkar. The Moish can say, we sold the name. Nekach u'memkar has a takanas hashuk. Or perhaps no. Perhaps when people give the money, it's a donation. It's a donation which on the side they get a certain amount of covet in exchange. But the ikur, what's going on is it's a donation being given to the Moish. Perhaps there'll be an akhmir in the Hilchos Ma'aseh Kesachim. If we look at it, when you dedicate a building, you're pushing buying covet. So if you buy something with Meister money, you have to make a deduction. If the covet is worth the $1 million, then you can't take this off. This is not stucco. This is mekach u'memkar. On the other hand, if you look at it as you're giving the donation to stucco and there just is a tevis hana on the side, there's a side benefit that you're getting covet out of it, then it probably would come off your Meister. Correct. And IRS naming a building does not come off the, you still get a full tax deduction. So at least the IRS is paskening that it's a matana, in which case it would have to be returned. Whether or not a Bezdin would necessarily agree with the IRS or not, you know, Sarachian, it's a bit of a judgment call, but it is an interesting question. Get the name back, right. But I'm not sure when this building until now was called the Bernard Madoff Building. I'm not sure what its resale value is. So, to briefly recap, if you have stolen goods that are sold, there's a takana tashuk. If it's given away as a present, there's no takana. And therefore, it would seem... So in these cases, if there's stolen money, you're able to track its stolen money. If it's paid to a worker, it's paid to a vendor, then you cannot recover the stolen goods. It was given away as a present. You would have the right to recover. What if these monies were paid to other investors? When you pay another investor, what is that? What do you do? What is that? So l'chayra, it should depend on the nature of the investment. And let's go through this piece by piece. Let's go back to the different cases that people brought up. If this Ponzi schemer was telling everyone that they're buying real estate in Eastern Europe, that's the investment, and it's baloney. The real estate never existed. He never bought it. It's been a Ponzi scheme from the beginning. When the first investor gets his check the first month, what's that money? What's that payment? So the investor thinks that I'm receiving profits that my property earns. And for that matter, if the investor calls up the Ponzi schemer and says, you know what, I want to withdraw my money, and he gets a check, he thinks that he just sold back his share of this real estate in Eastern Europe. That's what he thought at the time. Now, if that's what happened, if you buy a share of it, if you sell an investment to someone, and now you find out it was paid for with stolen goods, do you have to return the money? No, it's not the chumemkar. You sold your share in this investment to the ganav. So even if he paid with stolen money, it's nechumem, right? That's kind of such a. But now that we know from day one this was a scam, did you ever own a property in Eastern Europe? No, you owned nothing. What was there? The goslin owed you money. He was a goslin. He had a chayv to you. The money that he paid you, we know today, was only piranha chayv. He was paying back money that he stole from you. When you're paying back a debt, is there a takana tashuk? No. So what would come out is that if the investor, the thing was a scam from day one, he never owned anything, then all he had against the ganav was the ganav had a chayv to him, az gazela. When he paid him back with stolen money, this is ganav upara b'chayv, and there's no takana tashuk. So what would come out is that there, anyone who got any payment, even if it was for his principal, since his principal was nothing more than a chayv, there's no takana tashuk, and the later investors would be able to demand to get their money back. And what would come out is, essentially, is last in, first out. That the latest investors, the people who put in their money last, would get their money out, and all the people who were in from the beginning, since we know today they were paying money they got was all stolen money, they would have a fee to return all of it, regardless of whether it's principal, profit, it doesn't matter what he called it. Now, in contrast, if there was a legitimate investment, and now the investor is selling that investment back to the ganav, that's nakach u'memkar. They already, he's selling something. And therefore, by nakach u'memkar, there is a takana tashuk, and therefore be able to keep the money. Now, he would probably be limited to the true value of the investment, which is clearly less than what the Ponzi schemer led him to believe. But whatever that value was, whatever his item was really worth, that amount of money he could keep because of the Tefano Sashok, because of the Tefano Sashok.
When I came up with his investment, prior to him investing it in the endeavor, I had to give him the loan. I'm giving him the cut-off.
That's true. But once he spends it, one of two things will happen. Either he'll buy the investment, in which case he was acting as your shliach, you're now the proud owner of some real estate in Eastern Europe. Or he'll take it, he'll spend it on his own. In that case, he's a shleach yad. He's a goslin. But what he owes you now is he has a chayv to you.
So if the money is still there,
if your money was still there, what usually happens is that the money that you gave 6 months ago or 6 years ago is long gone. Now it's just the newer investors, their cash that's in. So l'chara, what should come out based on this analysis is last in, first out. It's the latest investors will get their money out. Everyone else who received stolen money will end up with a loss and will end up having to pay back, whether it was called principal or profit.
The true problem.
Correct. Correct. Burden of proof, like he raised, this is all in theory, to track where the money is, you'll need a very good forensic accountant. And unless there's a lot of money involved, you'll spend more on the accounting and on the interior than on the recovery. But at least conceptually, the last person in has the right to say, you just look, if he invested the money a month ago, look at the account and see where money went out to over the past month. And any money that went to pay back other investors, you can go after those investors. Because like this, the person who went in 6 months ago, the guy has stole from him. And the guy, and a goslin, what he did was offer, and he owes the money back. But now I put in money yesterday. The goslin took that money and gave it out to 10 people. I can go to those 10 people and say, you are a makabel matana, or it was your choyev was paid with my money. Give that money back to me. And that's why the one that comes in last, he can go after the people who received. The person who came in months ago, his money the ganav already stole and ate and destroyed, and therefore his claim is against the ganav, nobody else. I'm the one, the last person is the one that has other people who received it. So that is what should come out. Now this is wonderful in theory, but there is a major problem with this whole analysis. And that is, it's one thing if, as an investor, when the fellow called me up and said he needs $1 million to invest, I knocked on his door, came over to his house with a brown paper bag with $1 million of cash. So in that case, I hand him the cash. That is my cash, it's my money. If he then goes to his other investors and starts dishing out the money, I can go to the investors and say, you have my cash, you have my money. It's stolen goods, give it back to me. Now, in some circles, perhaps, this is how investments are made. But more typically, what happens is, when I hear about this great investment, I'll give the fellow a check, or I'll wire money from my account to his. Now, when I wire money from my account to his, what's really happening? What's happening is, if I have money in my bank account, so when I deposit money in the bank, the bank is not taking this wad of cash and putting it in a vault. They're taking it, they're lending it out to other people, there's some reserve requirements, but it's not. Essentially, I am lending money to the bank. Now, it's payable upon demand. I can demand repayment at any time, but I lent it to them. There's no dollar bill that belongs to me. They have a choiv. When I wire money to the swindler, I'm telling the bank that although you owe me $1 million, you go ahead, you transfer money to the swindler's bank account, and by doing that, you're paying me back. I don't owe you any money anymore. Now, the bank goes ahead and does that. And now the swindler goes into his bank and withdraws the money. That cash that he withdrew, he definitely got it through lying to me. And through lying to me. It was a fraud. I told my bank, don't pay me back, send it to his bank, and that's a fraud. But does that dollar bill belong to me? If that dollar bill gets destroyed in oinus, is it now a question that he's a shomer, is he chayv in oinus, not chayv in oinus? Or what he did wrong to me is, he caused me a loss because he convinced me to wire money out of my account to tell the bank, you know, you don't owe me money anymore, just give it to his bank. But there's no dollar bill, there's no item that I owned that he took. He just caused me to release the bank from their claim to me. If that's true, if we take this to the next step, when the ganiv takes the cash that he withdraws from his bank and starts giving it out, is he giving out my cash? Is he a goslin on this dollar bill? Or he's a goslin because through what he did, I released my bank, I lost the choy that the bank had to me. So if we look at it, which the choy we should, as nothing more than a choy, so what he did is he swindled me into giving up my choy, but the money that he collected, the choy, never belonged to me. If this dollar bill never belonged to me, if he goes ahead and gives away that dollar bill, I have no claim against the recipient. It was never my dollar. So it's true, I have a very strong claim against the ganav. You caused me a loss, but the recipient is not holding on to anything that at any point belonged to me.
And
it's true, there was a choyv, but the ganav didn't give the choyv as a present. The ganav went ahead, through this choyv, went to his bank and ended up with cash, and gave that cash away. That cash wasn't mine. So although I certainly have a claim against the swindler, because through his actions, the bank no longer owes me money, I transferred it to him. But that dollar that he got for the bank was never belonged to me. And therefore, although the God of me owes me money, but that dollar that he gave to the victim is not like someone stole my silver and gave it away. That silver was mine. I can recover that silver. Over here, where the God of gave away money that was never mine, so I have no claim against that dollar bill, and therefore, I should have absolutely no claim against the Mekabel Matana. Now, if this is true, this totally changes the entire halacha. What will come out is, if you have a schemer who went ahead and swindled billions of dollars from people, and then he gave it all away as a present, in theory, you should have no claim against the Mekabel Matana. The Takanas HaShuk is not negiah, because what he gave away was something that never belonged to the victim, and therefore your claim should be against the goslin, and you should have no way of recovering from a Mekabel Matana.
How about the goslin himself?
Certainly had a chiyuv, but he has no money. He already gave away as a present.
But according to this logic, you shouldn't be able, let's just say, pardon me, say he had money. Where is the, if he didn't use my money, then how can I, let's just say he came rich again, he has zero that I don't want to go after him. What claim, he didn't steal my money.
Not a question, my claim against him is he destroyed my chiyuv. The bank owed me money, and through his swindling, or I released him in exchange, the deal was, I'm going to release my bank by wiring it to you, in exchange for which you're going to pay me back whatever you promised me. So you owe that to me. I did my part of the bargain, you owe me the money back. So there's no question the guy owes me the money back. The issue is whether I have ownership on the dollar or on the debt that he collected from his bank. So we're not dealing with, the guy certainly has liability. Our issue is whether I own that dollar that the guy now has in his pocket. If you, when you have a claim against the Ghanaiyah, your guy, a claim against the Ghanaiyah is going to be there no matter what. But if you want to go after a third or fourth person in the chain, they didn't do anything wrong. Your claim is they're holding on to something that's mine. In this case, it may have been created through a fraud, but that was never mine. And if it's never mine, well, Chayrash should have no claim. He is. And therefore, the Ghanaiyah owes the money. There's no question he's liable. The issue here is, can I go after the recipient and say, you're holding my money? And there, if there is this break, if there is this switch because there was a chayv, the chayv shouldn't be able to. You don't have to call Gneva, it's a direct ground. Okay, now we're running out of time. Let me just go through. So although chayv in Sfar, you have this technical reason why it should be hard to go after the Mekabel Matana, I would just like to be more. There are a few tzadim in halacha, a few ways where he's perhaps chayiv. None of them are. They're all debatable. But a bezdin has to deal with this. Has a very difficult job. But I'd like to just go through some makiris in halacha why perhaps there is a liability in this case, even though there is this disconnect. The first is that the chazanish that has the following chiddush. Chazanish has what really is a similar case. Someone owed money to a creditor. The creditor sold the debt to a third party. However, he didn't tell the Baal Chayv, he didn't tell the person who owed the money that he sold it. So what he did then is he went over to the Baal Chayv and said, listen, you owe me money, I want you to pay me. And the debtor, not knowing that the Chayv was already sold, repaid the original Malva. The Chazanish has it sad to say that when he repays the money to the malva, the money automatically belongs to the buyer, the one who purchased the debt. How? How did that happen? There was no kinyan, it never belonged to him. So the chazanish says it's sad to say that just like there's a concept of aroi yajba, if you have a field and fruits grow in that field, you own the fruits, you don't need a separate kinyan, because anything that grows from your mammon belongs to you automatically. So the chazanish, perhaps you can argue when there's a chayv, the money that gets paid to satisfy the debt is like the payrus of a sada. And therefore, it automatically belongs to the true owner of the debt, even though he never did a ma'aseh kinyan. Now, you take that logic all the way. If the bank owes me money, and I give a check to the swindler thinking I'm getting something in exchange, and the swindler goes ahead, cashes the check, pulls out money from the bank. Now that we realize that the swindler, it was a fraud. That means he had no right to go ahead and to take this money. So it turns out, he used the check to collect a debt that was really owed to me. Because I only transferred to him in exchange for something that I never got. So if that's the case, you can argue that when the god of cashes the check, although I never made a kinyan on the money, since this money, this payment, is payment for the chayv that is to me, perhaps it automatically belongs to me. In which case, if the Ghanav takes this cash and gives away as a matana, we can go back to the original analysis, and we can go ahead and have direct claim against the Mekabel Matana.
The check is not a sale.
It's not a sale, not at all. But the check represents a debt that the bank owed to me. I gave the person a check that enables him to collect that debt. Since now with the fraud we realize it's my fault, perhaps when he cashes it, that money would belong to me. Now, again, in Halakha L'maisa, the Chazanish, first of all, is mesupik about this. Second of all, this really only helped one generation. When I give him the check, he kind of cashes the check and gives over cash. If it goes from one account to another account, then already even the Chazanish perhaps wouldn't apply, so it's not so simple. There's a similar Nesivus in Simon Kufkav Himmel. He has a similar case where a guy wants to repay a debt. He earmarks money. So he says even without a kinyan, someone else cannot take that money. It's Mazik Shibuda Shechadera, it's another Cheshvan. The last thing that I'd like to bring up, and we're running out of time, is the concept of Dina Machusa Dina. Now, throughout Chosh and Mishpat, whenever we have a halacha that is not consistent with the normal practice, the question is always, where and how do we apply Dina Machusa Dina? In this particular case, there are a number of reasons to argue that perhaps everyone would agree Dina Machusa Dina should apply. And that is, first of all, although the Shach says when the Dina Machusa is Seisr Halacha, we follow Halacha, we ignore the Dina de Machusa. Is there are shitos that are consistent with the din of malchus adina? Then already, it's not tzeis or halacha. So once we have a chazonish, even if it's a chiddush, and even though we are chokim on it, and perhaps halacha l'maisa, we would not be moitzi mamon based on it. But once we have a shita, perhaps the din of malchus adina is not neged halacha, it's not tzeis or halacha, because there is a shita like that, and therefore you'll be able to enforce it. The second reason is we do find by Hilchos Gzeila and Hilchos Hashavas Aveda, that even though after Yish, there's no chiyuv to return an Aveda, nevertheless, because of Dina Malchus Adina, Shach learns it's a takana, you do return it. So we do find at least precedent that in the area of returning Gezel Achar Yish, there can be a chiyuv of Dina Malchus Adina, even though it's Kneged Halacha. So perhaps over here, even though it's not Yish, here we're talking about a Shinoi or a switch, perhaps we can extend that as well. And lastly, we pointed out a number of times that when we have a new problem or a new issue that didn't exist b'mei Chazal, there's a stronger basis to say dina malchus adina. Because it's one thing when halacha says one thing, the malchus says we have a different approach, we have a different rule. So there we say we follow halacha, we do not follow the goyish rule. Ma'ashayin, there's a new messiah, and that new messiah is not explicitly addressed in halacha because the messiah didn't exist. There are a number of shittas that say, since the Malchus is addressing a new problem, a new Messias, we will follow those rules even if it's not, even if it's Knegan Halacha. So if that's the case, today where the idea of people transfer money today, it is not, the people don't transfer cash, it is virtually always done with checks, with wire transfers. So in such a case, this new Messias, you need new rules to protect people, so it is very mistarva, you would say, Dino Malchus Dino, according to all shittas. And next week, Emirat Hashem, there will be a special shiur. I've been, since the beginning of the Zedela, everyone has been asked